You're listening to Conversations with Kathy, podcast for women who are looking for a place filled with honest conversations, tangible takeaways, and new perspectives on life, love, and everything in between. And I'm your host, Kathy Ann Roach. Let's jump right in. Welcome back to Conversations with Kathy. Today I'm talking to Whitley Rogers. I think every parent or guardian should listen to this episode. Whitley shares with me what she's learned from a relationship that started out perfect, but at a very young age turned out to be sexually, emotionally, and mentally abusive. But Whitley is a survivor and shares her story of growth and personal development. She's a certified life coach and a mental health advocate. She is also the host of a podcast called In the Wake with Whitley and the co-founder of the End the Stigma Foundation. Through sharing her own story, she strives to empower others and to let them know that they aren't alone in the struggle. Please be aware that this episode contains content that some listeners might find disturbing. Let's jump into my conversation with Whitley. So hi, Whitney. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the opportunity of chatting with me and sharing your story with our listeners. I really believe that you do have a powerful story to share. And what actually attracted me, or what I was even more excited about when I spoke with you the first time, is how young you were and how mature you are to have gone through what you've gone through and to be standing strong where you are today. So let's just start from the very beginning. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name's Whitley Rogers. I'm 20 years old. I'm currently located in Las Vegas, Nevada. I am a podcast host myself, so I share a lot of my story over there. And I'm also the co-founder of End the Stigma, a mental health foundation. And I'm a certified life coach. So that's kind of my little spiel, I guess.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot for somebody as young as you are, and you should be very proud of everything that you've accomplished. I know when we spoke, you would attest that you weren't always this confident, this secure, and that as every young person, you had your challenges, but I think yours went a little bit deeper, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was 15 years old when my abusive ex started pursuing me. So we had been going to the same church, came from a religious background. I've kind of separated myself from that since then, but that's where I was coming from. And so, yeah, I was 15, just coming out of my freshman year of high school. He was older than me. And he was a super popular, charismatic kid. Everyone loved him. Everyone knew him. Teachers, church leaders, parents, girls, like he had everyone under his spell. Yes. And so I felt super lucky that he chose me.
And most people would think that church is safe. You know, church is a safe space. The kids know each other. The parents know each other. Just like you said, everybody knows everybody else. So you're thinking that's a safe space.
Yeah. And you're thinking that everyone that is going to church with you are good people, that they have good intentions. And on paper, I thought he met all of my requirements. He was perfect, it seemed like. So I was really blindsided when that wasn't the case.
And what happened? How did you start to see, in most cases where there's abuse, it doesn't start right away? You know, they say the person is really nice. Like you said, they tick all the boxes. When did the abuse or when did you start to feel uncomfortable in this relationship?
So, yeah, abusers are not abusive on the first date because then you probably wouldn't go on a second date with them.
Yes.
Or get in a relationship. Mm-hmm. So they kind of have to like reel you in. And that's the whole grooming, love bombing process. It's like gaining your trust, making you fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. So then they can turn around and use that against you. So it like escalated and happened really fast. On our first date, he kissed me for the first time and he asked me to be his girlfriend. All of it happened so fast. And then like within a month, he was telling me he loved me and that we were going to get married someday. And I was like a 16-year-old girl.
Yes.
And it was crazy when I think back.
But you were, how did you feel though? Were you excited about the possibilities?
Yes. And my parents are high school sweethearts. They met when they were 16, 17. Oh. And they lived happily ever after. Yes. So I was like, this is going to be my story too.
Yeah.
This is it for me.
Yeah.
So I really clung to that. I'm a hopeless romantic. And so, yeah, the love bombing happened. The grooming happened where he really just made me feel like the luckiest girl in the world and so many big grand gestures. And then it started to little things coming up, and it started with isolation and kind of pitting me against my friends or doubting my friendships that they were toxic or bad for my mental health. I had a best friend at the time, and he told me that she was causing me to have anxiety and mental health problems and that she was jealous of my relationship. So I kind of started distancing myself from her. And then if I wanted to hang out with my solid group of friends, with guys and girls, and I would hang out with them all the time. On the weekends, we did lots of fun stuff. But if I chose to hang out with them over him, he would get really upset or passive aggressive or just like stonewalling and ignoring me. And so to spare his anger, I subconsciously just stopped hanging out with them slowly. But it was okay for him to hang out with his friends. Like Saturday was for the boys, and yeah, he could go hang out with his group of friends and leave me by myself. But like if I wanted to hang out with my friends, that was so not okay. So it started with that and isolating me from everyone so that he was my sole person. I was solely dependent on him. And after a couple months dating him, like I went to school and I didn't have any close relationships. I didn't have anyone to turn to. So once the abuse really started escalating, it was like, he's all I got. I don't have anyone to turn to or talk to about this or anyone close enough now to even notice how much I was struggling.
And I would assume that this would have been a sort of like a cycle. So you all would, it would happen and then you would talk about it and he would express his side of it. And then you would, I guess, calm down and then it would happen again. And then, and you would probably not try to do it so that you wouldn't upset him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it, like, I don't know if I've mentioned already, it was mentally and sexually abusive. So that happened in both cases. Anxiety and depression manifested during that relationship. I hadn't struggled that severely before that, but because I was being mentally abused, like that really kicked in full force. And so he would be always with me and causing these breakdowns or these panic attacks or me to start sobbing over something. But because he was there, he also, from the outside, made it look like he was the savior. Yeah. So he was there to jump in and build me back up after he had just broken me down. Yeah. And so my parents and my family thought that he was so good for me in that moment, that he was really helping me through my anxiety and my panic attacks and my depression. And he was a blessing and my savior. But it was like no one realized that he was provoking all of this stuff and manipulating me and breaking me down. So it was a total cycle.
Yeah, I saw on your blog, I think it was one of your podcasts, that your dad had spoken about not knowing that all of this was happening at all. I guess, again, we're going back to the church setting. This is a good boy. Your parents have embraced him into a little bit of the family, and they're thinking he's so great, and they do not know. Is there any way that they could have known? Is there anything that they could have looked for to notice that something was wrong?
I mean, yes, looking back, they definitely see like different warning signs or kind of cries of help from me. But I always say that they're secondary survivors to my abuse. Like he really was manipulating them as well, manipulating their perception of me, that I was the crazy one, that I was overly sensitive and exaggerating. So when I would be crying about something he did, he was there texting them or calling them or talking to them without me, planting these seeds that like not to trust me, not to trust my word, because I was just blowing things out of proportion or I was crazy. And so he got close with my mom. So when I would be, you know, panicking, she would call him up and be like, we need you. You're the only one that can calm her down or help her. And it's really like, he was over here texting me and breaking me down and saying mean things to me. And that was the reason I was crying in the first place. So they trusted him. And yeah, he was a part of our family. Even though they trusted him, he was manipulating them and he was causing these rifts in my relationships with my family, because I was very close with my parents. And I would tell them everything all the time because we just had that open communication in our relationship. And I was really like best friends with my younger sister as well, but he would pit us against each other. And so it really, really messed up my relationship with my sister because he would use my insecurities and compare us to each other. Or say things like his mom wished that he was dating my younger sister because she thought she was prettier. And it's like, who says that to your girlfriend that you've been dating for months and months? Or he would lie to my parents and like force me to lie to them and just causing it so that I was no longer even close with my family. And so I didn't feel like I could reach out to them because they just thought I was crazy. And they even talked to him separately multiple times and were like, I know that she's a handful and because of her mental struggles, it's a lot to handle. So if you wanted to break up with her, like we would totally understand.
Wow.
Like, we are so grateful that you're sticking this out and, you know, taking care of her and being there for her. It was just like,
you probably felt very much alone. You know, you probably felt like I have nobody to turn to. Did you find in that time, in that confusion, that you were either gravitating back to him? Where did you go when you felt like, okay, I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do.
Well, there's like trauma bonding. So because he was the one provoking all of these traumatic things, sexual abuse, mental abuse, these panic attacks and depressive episodes. Because he was there in that moment, it was like I was bonded to him. Mm. And he was also the one kind of pulling me out of that in a sense, but not really because it was just continuous and this cycle. He was always there like semi-building me up afterwards. And so I would turn to him. I was seeing a therapist through that time. I still see her like 3 years later, which I'm a huge advocate for therapy. Everyone should be in therapy. But even though I was seeing a therapist, he was, like I said, very manipulative and very controlling. And so after every therapy appointment, he would demand to know everything I talked about to make sure that I didn't tell her anything that was going on or talk about him. So I would talk to her about like, I'm the problem in this relationship. Like, this is all my fault. I don't understand why these things are happening. I don't understand why I feel this way. And being in therapy during that relationship, it never like progressed or got anywhere. I was just continuously struggling because we weren't working on like the root of the problem. Right. And I never talked about the sexual abuse, that I was sexually active, the mental abuse or the horrible things that he would do or say to me, because I was also scared that she would tell my parents,
right,
or that she would intervene or give me advice like to not be with him. And I was scared of losing him because he was my only person. And he was feeding me the narrative that I was unlovable, that I was lucky that he was the only person that was able to see me at my worst points and still love me anyway. That like, he was the only person that was capable of doing that.
Yeah, abusers tend to have a typical playbook. You know, and they follow a particular pattern because I guess ultimately that works. What would you say was a turning point for you? Was that moment when you started? I know all along you're thinking something isn't right here. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. You know, my relationship isn't supposed to be like this. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you're torn between just what, like you say, the person's causing trauma is also the person who gives me pleasure.
Right.
And, you know, maybe if I just learn how to behave, then we're going to be fine. You know, you've started to buy into what the person is saying to you. But there comes a point in time where you start to go, okay, this is not right. And when would you think you started to have those moments that says, okay, it's not right. I need to do something about it.
So my story is kind of funny. It's really interesting. I mean, kind of going back to me feeling super alone and having nowhere to go, I was really suicidal during that time. And I had attempted suicide on multiple occasions because I thought, it wasn't that I wanted to die. I think that's a myth about suicide. It's that I wanted my pain and suffering to end, and I couldn't find any other way to make that happen. And so when I was feeling so alone in the dark depths of all of this, it felt like that was my only out to all of this. So fast forward, he actually broke up with me, and it was really because he had played with me, he had used my body, and he was done with me. Like, I was so broken to the point where it wasn't fun anymore for him. It was just a burden. So he broke up with me, but he was like still stringing me along, still had that hand in my life, that control, where he was like, it's not you, it's me. I need to work on myself. We're still going to get married. We're still going to be best friends. Nothing's going to change, except we're just not going to be romantic. And I just have to date other people. And so it's almost like he wanted me as like his side chick. And so I couldn't come to him if I needed anything or if I needed someone to talk or just a friend. It was only when he wanted something.
Yeah, when he needed you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there were a couple months, probably 3 months, where we were just in this weird middle state where he was not cutting me out of his life, like not necessarily moving on, and still feeding me this narrative that he loved me. We were still going to get married. He just needed some, like, a break and some space. But then also that, like, he didn't want to date me and that he wanted to date other people.
How old were you by this time?
I was 17.
Okay.
And I kind of woke up during that time. There were 48 hours after the initial breakup that I was just like hysterical, and I had attempted suicide 4 times, and because I thought my life was over, because I was like, this was my end all be all. I don't know what to do from now. Like, no one is going to love me and I'm never going to have this again. And I was always scared of getting pregnant because it was sexual abuse. It was rape. It wasn't consensual or using protection. And so I was like, he could have just gotten me pregnant and he just left me. Like, I was always scared that I was pregnant. So I was hysterical saying all of these things. And it was super weird. I don't know how it happened. It really seems like a miracle, but my parents were physically restraining me so that I wouldn't hurt myself. And I'm just like sobbing and saying all of these things out loud. When I have a breakdown, I just like talk nonstop. Yeah. Everything that's going through my head is coming out. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying horrible things like, I never want to breathe again. I will never find love. I'm all alone. And then, like, through the tears, I start building myself up and I'm like, this isn't the end. I am lovable. I'm a badass. I can do this. And I remember my sisters laughing in that moment because it was probably so weird from the outside seeing me like distraught and then all of a sudden like building myself back up. And from that moment on, I was like, I have to do this for myself. I think I was always looking for external sources to almost save me or cure me, whether it was him, whether it was my parents or my therapist. And I was like, I'm the only one that fully understands what I'm going through.
Yeah.
You know, no one else is in my body. No one else is in my mind. And so I have to actually put in the work to deal with this and cope with this. And I have to learn to love myself again and treat myself right, because I was always looking externally for someone else to love me, to tell me I'm beautiful, to tell me all these great things. But I have to believe that for myself and stand up for myself. Like, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve this middle state and being strung along. And so after that 48 hours, I just like dove headfirst into self-help and prioritizing my mental health and learning to love myself. And I just slowly started gaining that confidence and taking my power back. And I had given him an ultimatum, basically like, I'm not doing this middle state anymore. It's like one or the other. And he still strung me along, never gave me an answer. And I finally like put a due date on it. And I was like, all right, I'm cutting you out of my life. I can't do this. This isn't good for my mental health anymore. You know, you're causing this. You're stopping me from moving forward right now. And I blocked him. I got rid of all his stuff. And I mean, it was all up since then.
it's like a light bulb went off in your head and then you just stayed on that path.
Yeah. Snapped out of his spell. Like, it was once I had a little bit of distance from him, I could kind of see almost like looking from the outside in of all these things. Like in the middle of it, I didn't realize that it was rape. I didn't realize that it was abusive or that he was manipulative. Because I was so blinded by love and he was, you know, always feeding me these narratives. But once I was out of that and I started making friends again and seeing their relationships, I was like, oh, this isn't normal. Your boyfriend isn't supposed to say horrible things to you or treat you like that. Or sex is supposed to be enjoyable and not make you feel worthless and dirty afterwards.
Yeah.
And I just had these moments of like waking up. And then I was actually listening to, it took like a couple months for me to actually realize that that was full on abuse and that I was raped. I was listening to like a podcast episode about rape myths, and they were like, it's not always in a dark alleyway by a stranger. Like a lot of times it's by your partner or a family member or someone you know and trust. And they kind of just went through the rape myths, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
like that happened to me. So yeah, it was a long span of me just like slowly getting there and realizing what had actually happened to me.
What would you say to the person listening who is in a similar situation and wondering how to, I mean, there's no magic to have that light bulb go off. But if you are listening and a person is listening and thinking about, okay, this story sounds similar to what I'm going through, I know for me, you're an inspiration that you don't have to stay in that situation and that there is life outside of that relationship that isn't working. What would you say to somebody who's in a similar situation?
So one, you're not alone and you're not crazy. I think education is powerful. Knowledge is power. So if you even have like an inkling that something is off in your relationship or that you, it may be abuse or anything like that, start to maybe pick up a book about that or read some articles or listen to a podcast and just see. Maybe you'll read it and be like, oh, this isn't really abuse. Maybe it's something else that's happening, or it might start checking boxes and help you realize like, oh, okay, okay. And help you give the vocabulary to describe what is going on. Because I didn't know what sexual assault really meant. I didn't know what an abuser looked like or the tactics. I didn't know what consent even entailed. And then I had a choice. And after reading books and listening to podcasts and following different people on social media, I just went full force into like educating myself on this and understanding what had happened to me. And again, it gave me the vocabulary to describe what happened to me. And it was very empowering and also validating that like, I'm not crazy. This is real. This does actually happen. And after joining groups, support groups with different survivors online and hearing their stories or reading anonymous stories, it really just validated again that I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy.
And I know it would serve you well in terms of helping and working with the people and the women that you work with today, because you have this firsthand experience of understanding totally how they feel and what is necessary to get to the next step. Right. Do you have like a favorite song that you listen to, something that inspires you? Do you have a favorite book? Do you have something that you know, that has helped you on the days or continues to help you on the days when it's a little tough?
I love that question. So the book that I always recommend is called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry Controlling Men by Lundy Bancroft. And I know he says inside the minds of angry controlling men, but it does apply to women, non-binary. Like, he just mostly works with men. And so that's why he uses that. But he does state that this is for all abusers. But he is a therapist that has worked with thousands of abusive men, or just abusers and their victims. And he has like an abuser program, like treatment program. And so that book was given to me by a friend, and it was super empowering and kind of just went through all of the different tactics of abusers and the different kinds of abusers, warning signs and, you know, safety plans and healing and all that. So I think that one is a super great resource. And then as for a song, my song that's like the theme song of my life is called Rise Up by Andra Day. I have the lyrics on my wall.
I won't put you on the spot and ask you to sing it.
I am not a singer. But it's so powerful. I listen to it all the time, and it just gives me chills. Just that even though I was in the depths of hell, it felt like at moments, like I'm able to rise up, and it's a continuous rising up over and over again because it's an up and down journey. I have triggers. This is going to affect me, but I just continue to get back up. It doesn't get easier, but I get stronger because of that.
So Italy, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that persons listening will get so much from this because I have gotten so much information from this. And I just want to thank you so, so very much.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Conversations with Kathy. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. It helps others just like you to find the show. And if you want to connect with me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Kathy Ann Roach, or in my Facebook group, Conversations with Kathy, where we connect live, discuss the episodes, and share tips for improving our lives. So until next time.